smoke one, ready to pull one. Toe one, scared of no one. You never know when your close ones is a pussy till your nose run. Big and back bamboo, trigger happy as goons. Bigger mansion and pool, I need a map of this room. Don't need a casket to view them, we lead the rats in the sewers. I'm speeding passing the newest, soft top like the Jewish. Thrashy sweatshirt, bands on, all daddy bitches hands on. Fuck your bitch for a Sam's card, a SIM card and an Android. Shots all in the airway, bullets make them do ballet. Pulling triggers like hairspray, shoot them in the head, bad hair day. In broad daylight, let's play. Little kids playing jump rope, leave his body on the front porch. It's a cold world, but the sun show. Wear the paper and the drugs though, at your nasal with the snub nose. I be seen with the unseen, you be seen with the unknowns.
What's up, what's good with it, everybody? Back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. This week, it's a special week, man. This upcoming weekend, as far as sports is concerned, has a lot of highly anticipated matchups. So we'll go ahead and get into that. But first and foremost, Sam, what's good?
What's good, world? And hey, before we get started today, man, I just got some news.
What's that?
I just can't believe it. I just seen it. The Board of Regents at Maryland recommends that they reinstate DJ Durkin.
I saw that.
What the hell are they talking about?
I have no idea. That definitely makes you look at Maryland as a university in a negative light for sure. That's definitely, for me, if I have a child that's being recruited, that's the last school that you'll be going to. I guarantee you won't step foot on that campus, not for recruiting visits, none of that.
Yeah, we're going D2 before we go to Maryland to play football with DJ Durkin coming back. Come on now.
That's a fact. I don't feel like that bodes well for what you're trying to do as a university. I just think that's utterly ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. I can't even wrap my head around why they would think to make that decision.
That's just puzzling.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. What Davis be saying, that's beyond me. I don't know why they did that. That's word. But yeah, man, let's go ahead and jump into some of our topics this week. As I already stated, we have some highly anticipated matchups this week, and one of those matchups is LSU-Alabama. Now, with those two teams playing this weekend, from the outside looking in, what is the ideal result of that game for the teams on the outside looking in? As far as those teams are concerned, I mean like Georgia, who's right outside, who just came off of a big win against Florida last week. You got Michigan, who's sitting at 5, that's right on the outside. And you got Oklahoma, and you have Ohio State. Other teams sitting on the outside that I feel like are still in the conversation for the playoffs. My question to you is, what result are those teams looking for? What would be the best possible result for those teams?
Well, considering those teams have L's, the only result that could benefit those teams is LSU losing that football game. I mean, I know you've been talking about all year that you got LSU beating Bama, but you were referring to that as a spoiler type of game.
Exactly.
We had no idea that LSU would be contending at this point in the season. That changes everything. If Bama loses this game, then either Oklahoma or Ohio State, one of those two teams are out. For sure. Maybe even three teams might be out. Bama's getting in with one loss.
See, that's my thing. My standpoint as far as this particular game is concerned is I don't think that's the best situation, especially for a team like Ohio State. As far as a team like Ohio State is concerned, the best possible thing that I could see coming from this outside of LSU losing this game would be for LSU to win the game.
Decidedly,
and go to the SEC championship, play Alabama again in the SEC championship, and beat Alabama then as well.
Because which isn't happening. The same team's not beating Bama twice.
That's a fact. We saw a few years back with the Honey Badger, They beat Alabama regular season, turned around and played Alabama. What was in the national championship, right?
Yep.
Alabama like got the revenge. Yeah. That's Nick Saban. That you don't see that. You don't see the same team beat Nick Saban twice.
Not in the same year.
Exactly. That's a fact. And that, to me, would be an ideal scenario for the simple fact that, excuse me, if Alabama wins this game, regardless of what happens from this point on, Alabama's getting into the playoff. So with that being said, that means, let's say Alabama does beat LSU. That would give LSU two losses in the conference, which would then put Georgia in the driver's seat as going to the SEC championship. So for a team like Georgia, you're actually hoping that LSU loses, because if LSU loses, now you are in the driver's seats to play against an undefeated Alabama team in the SEC title game. And if you win that game, you pretty much punch your ticket to get into the playoff, regardless of whether what happens with Alabama or not. Alabama will most likely be a lock if they go undefeated and lose in the SEC championship. And if Georgia goes to the SEC championship and beats an undefeated Alabama team, then we're in a situation like last year. Two SEC teams in the playoff.
And I think for the foreseeable future, the SEC is going to be a two-bid league. I mean,
it's looking that way.
It's hard for them not to be. I mean, yeah, it's going to be hard to not get two SEC teams a year in the Final Four.
Or any, for that matter.
There's never going to be a time where there's none.
I think that there will be. I don't know what the scenario would have to be, but I wouldn't be surprised to see that.
I think eventually the SEC is going to not dominate in the sense of winning the Final Four every year, but as far as appearing in the Final Four, I think the SEC is going to dominate it so much, it's going to put pressure on the playoff committee to
extend it. Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I could definitely see that.
I mean, the playoff is good and everything, but nobody want to keep watching
four teams.
And
like,
plus, really, the playoff,
and it's been the same teams
every year. Basically, we have one team. The fourth spot has been miscellaneous.
Yeah, basically,
kind of. Because I mean, it. I mean, I don't know. It's been the same four or five teams.
It has. There's, with the exception of, I believe it was Michigan State who was in it one year, it's really been Alabama has multiple appearances. Clemson has multiple appearances. Ohio State has multiple appearances. Oklahoma has multiple appearances. I mean,
and we're talking about multiple appearances in what, 4 years?
Yeah, like it hasn't, the playoff hasn't been active long enough for these teams to have that many, for it to be that many teams to have multiple bids in the playoff.
I think eight would be perfect. I think eight will give you room for some upsets.
I agree.
It would give you room for teams like a UCF from last year who really, they're never going to get in a four, but in an eight, you got to throw them in.
Mm-hmm.
The year when we went on that run at the end of the year with Sam Darnold, the first year
Sam
Darnold
started, yeah,
like
when y'all lost to Bama in the opener,
we could have made some noise. You know what I mean?
But yeah, that's a fact. Y'all and Penn State that year,
yeah, we
because there was a lot of people that were talking about that year. Penn State got snubbed by Ohio State because Penn State beat Ohio State and won the conference,
right?
But Ohio State got in over them, and y'all ended up beating Penn State in that bowl game, right?
Yep. Rose
yeah,
Bowl.
So there it is. I mean, that's two more teams that were definitely worthy. I felt like deserving of being in the playoff. They got, you know, didn't get the opportunity for the simple fact that it was only four.
Yeah. Eight would be perfect, but right now we just gotta live with the four. That's what we got. And the SEC is looking like they probably got an 85% chance of getting two teams in this year.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. It would have to be something crazy happened, like Alabama pretty much just run the table completely to get in for no other SEC team to get in. Like Alabama's going to have to dominate LSU and then turn around and dominate Georgia in the conference championship or whoever else they face, which most likely will be Georgia. But that's my take on this particular situation. I think for teams like Georgia, you're looking for LSU to lose. And for Ohio State, it could really – Ohio State and Michigan. Oklahoma's kind of like the dark horse. I feel like they can get in, but I feel like they're kind of that team that they're liable to get jumped because they don't have another major game, I don't believe. Did they play WU?
Who we talking about?
Oklahoma.
Yeah, they played WVU. I think that's the last game of the season.
Yeah, so that's also a long shot because you look at a team like WVU who they're sitting at 12 right now. So that's not necessarily a resume builder as far as like
they 12 in the playoff.
I believe so. Yes, they are. They're 12. So with that being said, you're looking at a team in Oklahoma who doesn't have very much more of a resume builder. Ohio State and Michigan, they look forward to that matchup. Michigan definitely can strengthen their resume with a win this week against Penn State and a win against Ohio State. That pretty much puts them in there as far as I'm concerned. And they've also got the conference championship. With Ohio State, you have a team in Michigan who's undefeated in the conference and has that one loss to Notre Dame. So that can also be a resume builder. So I feel like Oklahoma at this point is the dark horse in that scenario. So it doesn't really matter too much as far as what happens with this Alabama-LSU game. I don't think that's going to play much of a role into them because of where they sit and what their future looks like. But as far as Ohio State and Michigan, I feel like it could go either way. It could go in their favor either way. But if Alabama loses, it's definitely going to make it much more difficult. As I said, the only other option is for Alabama to lose twice. And
you know, don't see it happening. What I think is about to change up some shit is I think Clemson got an L on the horizon.
I agree 100%. I think that's – like I said, once Kelly Bryant left, I don't believe in Clemson the way that I did. And whether it be prior to the ACC championship or not, I think – one loss from a Clemson team, it puts them out of the conversation. I feel like they're no longer in the playoffs.
The ACC is just horrible this year. None of the teams we thought they were going to be good this year in the ACC panned out.
Exactly.
Nobody.
I agree.
Besides Clemson.
I agree.
It's some of the good teams that's in the ACC, but it ain't nobody we thought was going to be good.
Yeah, that's a fact. But
like Virginia, who else? Somebody else was ranked in the ACC now.
Miami was.
Syracuse, they like – they ain't ranked, but I think they – Syracuse 6-3 or 7-2. Mm-hmm. They wanted the better teams in the ACC as well. Then you got, like, Florida State, god awful. Virginia Tech, terrible. Like, these teams ain't pan out.
Not at all.
That's hurting Clemson.
Yes, I agree 100%. And like I said – or like you said, I agree 100% that – there's a loss looming for a team like Clemson. It's just, I feel like at this point, it just almost feels fitting because they're not head and shoulders above everybody else. Like, they've been playing good ball, but they're not, like I said, they're not that team that just scared. They're not scary as far as these other teams are concerned. I feel like these other teams, I really look at them as they've definitely got a chance to win it all. But Clemson, I don't know. I'm not a believer in them. I'm just not. It's just something about it down there that I'm not feeling Clemson the way I was the last couple of years when they got into the playoffs.
To me, Bama's the only team so far that looks to me like ain't nobody fucking with them.
That's a fact, and a lot of that has to do with who Alabama has played. That's why this week's game is going to be so important because if Alabama really comes out and punishes LSU – like I said, what happens from here on out does not matter. Alabama is getting into that playoff for the simple fact that that was their test. Like, they haven't played anybody else that's tough, and you play against a number four LSU team. If you come in and dominate that team, nobody can say anything. They can't say, oh, they ain't play nobody or this, and that, because, I mean, that's the toughest test. I mean, they number four team in the nation. What more can you say?
And is LSU? Did LSU get the fourth slot in the playoff?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I missed it. I was out trick-or-treating.
They got the fourth slot, if I'm not mistaken. Let me check again to make sure. But pretty positive that last I checked, they got that number four slot. So
I feel like they should have put them at, like, two.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise. It wouldn't have surprised me at all if they would have got that high. Just to, and that would have made this game so much more intense.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I thought they might have did it, just because LSU got the sec. They really got the first best resume in the country, but you're not gonna put them above Bama. So I thought they would put them at two and then let them fight it out.
Oh, you know what I mean? I stand corrected. LSU is number three.
Okay, that okay. That's okay. That makes sense. So Notre Dame at 40.
Correct. And Ohio State is dropped. They've dropped.
Charge seven?
No. Ohio State is – they dropped a 10. Washington State has jumped Ohio State. Washington State, Kentucky. It's – all right, here. One is Bama. Two is Clemson. Three is LSU. Four is Notre Dame. Five is Michigan. Six is Georgia. Seven is Oklahoma. Eight is Washington State. Nine is UK. 10 is Ohio State.
Damn, they jumped y'all to 10. I thought y'all would.
Reason being is because we didn't play last week. That's what really hurt.
And y'all not gunning right now. Y'all not gunning for the y'all. As if it ended right now, y'all wouldn't even be in the conference title, right?
Well,
because I mean, I know y'all ain't played Michigan, and that's a big game. But
so that's the same division. So
yeah, but as of right now, they at number one in the division, right?
Yeah, because they don't have a loss in the division.
Yeah. So yeah, that. So yeah, that's why y'all at 10. Because right now it's looking like the Big Ten representative is going to be Michigan. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a fact. And that's the big. That's another big thing is they got a big game this week with Penn State, who sits at 14. And WU actually dropped, too. They were 12th. They're 13th now.
Man, look, I'm going to go ahead and say it. If Michigan lose this game this week, they got to throw Harbaugh on the hot seat, man.
I think Harbaugh should have been on a hot seat.
He kind of was, though. Like, a lot of the alumni wasn't feeling his rival record and shit. But now they back up to number five. It ain't going to be too much they can say, but – if y'all lose, if they lose before they even get to play y'all, man,
I feel like he wasn't on the hot seat for the simple fact that when he had that Jabril Peppers squad, they were really in the conversation for
he got the same playoffs. Record.
They
he got
were
the same record. Well, before this season started, he had the same record at Michigan as Brian Kelly.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I did not know that. That's definitely hot seat material. But that, like I said, that Jabril Peppers team, they were an overtime. They were actually an arguable, debatable call away from being in the playoffs. Because if they beat Ohio State in that last game when JT Barrett was called for a first down when a lot of people thought that it wasn't, Michigan wins that ball game, and they go into the playoff because they play Wisconsin in the conference championship, which I had them beaten. But yeah, like I said, they were one snap away from being in the playoff, so I don't think that he was entirely on the hot seat. Plus, his name holds a lot of weight too.
That's what it is, because bro, he doesn't win big games, but yeah, their record has been decent a couple times since he's been there. But man, he doesn't win any big games.
I agree.
But he 100%. Has you. Like I said, I picked them to go to the final, to the playoff, and a lot of that was because he actually has a quarterback now, and that's what the alumni was all. Well, I didn't hear the alumni say this, but a person
there's been rumblings.
Yeah, that they was going. Now they're like, okay, he's got a quarterback now, so no excuses type shit. Like, all right,
that's
now,
a fact.
You know what I mean? Like this Michigan. We brought you in to bring us back. I mean, people talk about us now, but we ain't where we want to be.
That's a fact. Now, staying on Michigan a little bit, as I said, they got a big-time game against Penn State this week. There are a lot of other big-time games that are going on. So outside of the Bama-LSU game, which game are you looking forward to? Or which game are you most looking forward to outside of that game this week?
I'm definitely looking forward to the Michigan-Penn State, and I'm also looking forward to Texas-West Virginia.
I want to see
what West Virginia is really about to do. Like, we know they're not making the playoff this year if we're going to keep it 100.
Yeah.
But can they end the season around?
On a high note.
Six, seven, like somewhere around, like I just would like to see West Virginia finish a season out strong, beat Texas, beat Oklahoma,
win a conference.
Yeah, and be like, see, okay, we are good. We about ready to compete. We taking a step. It would just be nice to see West Virginia actually finish high at the end of the season for once.
For the fans' sake, as much as they talk about this WVU team, this would actually give them some leverage to actually talk, because as outlandish as WVU fans sound, you would think that they've already been in that position. But, I mean, when's the last time the W has even been in a conversation to be
in? What was it, like 06?
Yeah, a long time ago.
What year was that?
I think it was 06. No, it wasn't 06. It was before 06.
05?
Yeah. It was somewhere around. I want to say it was 05. Pat White, Steve Slayton.
It was the year Tebow and them won it.
I'd
be trying to tell WVU fans, even if they would have beat Pitt, man, Tebow and them would have beat the shit out of that.
That's a fact.
Man, that Florida team was, or that defense was loaded with NFL talent, man.
Yeah.
And then you had Hernandez and them on offense. That team was loaded.
Percy Harvin, they were super stacked.
West Virginia wasn't beating them, but it would have been dope as hell to see them in the title, though.
I agree 100%. But as far as I'm concerned, I would definitely have to say the Penn State-Michigan game. That's definitely a game for me to look out for. Obviously, with me being an Ohio State fan, that definitely holds a lot of weight. And I'm actually hoping Michigan wins that game. And, excuse me, so by the time we play Michigan, it's really Michigan is basically in the playoffs, which will make our resume look a lot better. But, I think I'm kind of looking forward to that Georgia-UK game. I don't know why. I feel like Georgia coming off of that Florida game and that game not being quite as close as we expected it to be, this game is definitely going to be closer, and for the simple fact that it's in Lexington. I feel like it's going to be a crazy environment. I think it's going to be rocking because UK hasn't been this good in a long time in football. Right on the horizon of basketball season, so you know the fans are already rowdy for that. Better believe they're going to show up and show out for this UGA game. But I still think Georgia wins. I just think it's going to be a lot closer than what people think. But those are the two games I'm looking forward to, most definitely. But let's talk about another team, a team that obviously we just found out jumped Ohio State in the polls. Washington State. Now, most times I would be upset with Pac-12 teams, you know, jumping Ohio State and stuff like that, but I'm not upset about this at all because Washington State's resume is not bad at all. I mean, it's not like they have, like, marquee wins, but you're looking at a team that is a field goal away from being undefeated. They lost to your boys, I believe, 39-36, I think the final score was, so... I mean, is Washington State really making a case for playoff consideration? Like, as I just said, they jumped Ohio State already, so they're sitting at ninth. If they run the table, win their conference, win the rest of their games, do they have a chance to make a push at making the playoffs? I know we already talked about how a Pac-12 team is not going to make it, but are they making a case for it?
I mean – they might, they, if they win out, they might go finish the season around number seven or something. But that, I feel like that's their peak seven. They're not going to be getting considered for the playoff. Nah. Especially with a loss to us. No. Not this year. And another reason is because we just touched on it. I mean, SEC's most likely getting two teams. So then that leaves three. Well, we have three conferences trying to get two slots.
Yeah.
Big Ten, ACC, big four conferences trying to get two spots.
And then a team that's independent.
Huh?
I said, yeah, and team's independent.
It's over. It's not happening. They're not getting in. No.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that they have a shot of getting in, but they're definitely making it interesting with looking at how they are. Like, they're 7-1 right now. As I said, their only loss came to USC. And let me double-check that score. Yeah, 39-36 was the final score. And, I mean, if we're being honest, the rest of their games outside of the Stanford game and the Utah game, they weren't close. Like, they beat, I believe they played Wyoming season opener, 41-19, San Jose State, 31-0, Eastern Washington, 59-24. Then they ran into USC at USC, 39-36.
See, that's the number one problem right there.
The resume. Non-conference
schedule. Like, it ain't even got to be a ranked team, but can you play like a Power 5 team at least? Like,
but the thing that does bode well for them is when they play Oregon. Oregon was ranked 12th at the time.
Right.
And they beat Oregon by 14. They beat them 34-20. So it wasn't really.
What's going to kill them? It's not going to be that they got a bad resume. It's just going to be that every team ahead of them's resume
is better. I agree 100%. And I feel like maybe that's the reason why I'm not panicking as an Ohio State fan that's with them jumping us. Like, it's, I know that the games we have ahead are definitely worthy of us jumping them and probably a couple of others. So I'm not too worried about that. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, like I said, Washington State, they're definitely making it interesting, but I don't think that they have a case to get in by no means. There's going to have to be a complete debacle on everybody's point of view for them to even be considered. Notre Dame's going to have to lose and lose to somebody that's terrible. They can't lose to a USC team. That doesn't help them because y'all as in Washington State lost to USC as well. Exactly. So they'll have to lose to somebody other than USC and probably lose to USC too. Ohio State's going to have to lose another game. Penn State is going to have to beat Michigan, and then Michigan's going to have to lose to Ohio State too. It would just have to be a whole bunch. It would have to be crazy. And even with that being said, we might be looking – if all of that happens that I just said, we might be looking at a four-team SEC playoff. Like,
for real, like,
I feel like that would happen before Washington State would get in. That's a fact. But let's switch gears a little bit. Let's touch on this NFL. Now, as everybody knows, today was the trade deadline, and there were some moves made. I'm talking major moves. There were a lot of moves as far as teams trading last minute to try to, you know, bolster their rosters. And, I mean, whew, it's just, I don't know. There are some things that I feel like are huge, and some things that I feel like could be huge. It just depends on how the situation plays out. But to me, let me ask you, which trade was most needed? Out of all of the trades that were made, which trade do you think was most needed?
I feel it's kind of hard to say because I feel like all of them were pretty – a lot of teams covered some needs.
Mm-hmm.
But – I would probably say, let's see, Demaryius Thomas to the Texans, because they just lost Will Fuller
again.
Yeah, and they desperately needed to have a second option out there for Deshaun Watson. They just started clicking. You know, yeah, I'm gonna go with Demaryius Thomas to the Texans.
Yeah, I feel like that could be a huge one if Demaryius Thomas starts catching the ball, if he starts becoming the Demaryius Thomas that we know he can be. Now, I feel like it should be a lot easier on him, seeing as he will no longer be the number one receiver. He will be playing alongside a top five receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. So, obviously, the defense is going to be focused on Hopkins, not so much as him. He's going to have a lot of opportunity to prove that he's worthy of them trading for him. So that's definitely on my list. I probably have that as number two. The number one for me is Philly going out to grab Golden Tate. That's colossal to me for the simple fact that Philly, they already had decent receiver play. But now you just bolstered your receiver play. Like, it really got so much better by you grabbing a guy like Golden Tate. He's extremely reliable. He makes plays when you need him to make plays. And you still have Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Agholor. You didn't have to part ways with any of your wide receivers. And you just brought in another weapon for your guy and Carson Wentz. So that, to me, was definitely really big for an offense that seems to be sputtering here recently. But Demaryius Thomas is also a big one. Let's see, what else? One that I'm just going to have to speak on. It's not necessarily a needed trade, but come on, man. Like,
favorite one of the
day. Oh, my gosh. When I saw this trade, I hit you immediately. Like, bro, y'all got to chill. Like, y'all, I don't know what y'all really have planned, but it's really getting crazy. For those who don't know, the Rams went out with that stellar defense that they already have, went out and got Dante Fowler from the Jags. And they didn't have to part ways with any of their defensive players, any of their offensive players. They traded a third-round pick in this upcoming draft and a fifth-round pick in the 2020 draft just to get Dante Fowler. And they got him. So now you add a guy like that with Aaron Donald and the rest of those studs on defense. Like, oh, my goodness. I just don't understand. I don't understand it at all. What y'all got going on out there in Los Angeles, man?
Man, it's time to be great again.
It's looking like it. Like, goodness. Like, as, if y'all tuned in to our episode last week, y'all know that I did pick Green Bay to beat St. Louis and
L.A. now.
Or, excuse me, L.A., yeah. As I watched the game, I reached out to Sam right after the game and was like, bro, y'all really got it. Like, that was a big-time win for y'all. Granted, Ty Montgomery did give them that game. He's also somebody that got traded. He's now a Raven. And they said, the article that I read said, Ty Montgomery fumbles, Packers trading. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, it really looks that way. I don't think that was their intent. Nah, that's like, it wasn't a punishment. But it really is extremely funny to me that he lost in that game. And then, bam, look at him now. Like, he's no longer in a Packer uniform. But
because, look, now, one thing I got to say about that is I know your coaches always tell you, and everybody always says that you don't lose the game on one play. I'm personally a person that I believe that statement, but at the same time, I still believe that it's not always true. Yeah, a lot of things happen that can lose you the game throughout the game, but at the end of the game, those plays have to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like sometimes at a certain level, especially definitely in the pros. Man, if you like J.R. Smith, like what he did in the finals, don't come and tell me that play didn't lose the Cavaliers that game. Yeah, they made a bunch of mistakes throughout that game, but they still had a chance to win.
Exactly.
Like, so, like I said, in certain levels and on certain players, I just feel like that statement's not true. Sometimes one play does lose the game, especially when the play that needs to be made is kneel the damn ball.
Yep.
Like, come on. Like, yeah, you lost the game, bro. All you had to do was kneel it.
I agree.
And when you take into consideration that he was being a brat over there because he wasn't touching the ball.
Yep.
That even adds to it. Like, you brought it out because you wanted to be the hero because you wasn't touching the ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's not team football.
That's a fact.
I don't know.
That's a fact. But, like I was saying, I reached out to Sam immediately and was like, Y'all really got it. Like, that was a resilient win. Like, that was probably Green Bay's best game that they played of the season. And what's the dude's name? Alexander, the D-back. He played out of his mind for Green Bay. He was all over the field. They tested him. Jair Alexander, I think his name is. They tested him all night. And he made play after play after play after play for Green Bay. So, like I said, Green Bay played their best game of the season. And it still wasn't enough. It came down to gutsy plays. I love McVay. I love that guy. I swear I do as a coach. It was early in the game, y'all's offense wasn't really moving. It kept going back and forth. Like, y'all just kept punting to each other. McVay's like, forget this. I don't care. He runs a fake punt, passes the ball. His punter passes the ball. And, I mean, that plays like that are
that's what
extremely pivotal.
Teams. Special teams was huge for us. We made another special teams play in that game too, when we was down 10-0. That punt where we downed it
and then got the safety.
Exactly. That's championship football right there.
I agree. You guys are definitely looking like a championship ball club. And then you turn around and add a guy like Fowler, like, oh my goodness. Another major trade was Clinton Dix went from Green Bay as well to the Redskins. And it kind of makes you think, like, what's going on down there in Green Bay? They're just parting ways with everything. Maybe they're looking forward to the future. They got a 2019, which is next year's, fourth-round draft pick for Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. So, Washington, a team who is currently leading their division, gets better on defense. Now you add a guy like Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Josh Norman out there. So, their defense definitely got better, I would definitely say. But this was definitely exciting for me. But one thing that I'm kind of disappointed about is the fact that Le'Veon is still a Steeler.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
That's extremely disappointing to me because Le'Veon is a guy who I enjoy watching. For a guy to have that much talent, I feel like now it's time that you part ways with a guy like that. I feel like James Conner is giving you what you need. There's no need for you to still hold on to a guy like that. Because, I mean, what's going to happen in the offseason now? You're probably just risking losing him. It's probably going to come down to you releasing him because he's probably not going to sign back now that James Conner is doing what he's doing. Because now you guys, as Pittsburgh, probably feel like, we don't got to offer you all that money we was going to offer you. We got a guy now.
So that you don't got to pay.
Exactly. So they're not – I feel like him getting all that money is out the window now. So now it's going to come down to him walking. They're going to have to let him walk eventually. And I feel like that's what's going to happen this offseason. But I don't know. I definitely would have liked to see him go somewhere so he could get back active this year. But so much for that. Let's touch on another team, though. Everybody's been talking about the Rams, the Chiefs. Even the Patriots a little bit, but there's one particular team that I feel like is playing great ball, 6-game win streak. They haven't lost since they lost that, their only loss since they lost that game. That's being New Orleans. They seem to be under the radar. How good do you think the Saints are, and why don't you think anybody's talking about them?
I think the Saints are the second-best team in the NFC. And I think the reason why nobody's talking about them is there's so many other hot topics going on in the NFL that they're just flying under the radar. Like, that nobody's really paying them any mind because we're talking about the Rams, the Chiefs, and Mahomes, and Tom Brady, and the Cowboys for some damn reason.
That's going to be an every year subject. No matter whether they playing terrible, mediocre, or great, they're going to be the topic of discussion.
We got the Eric Reed and them beefing. And it's just so much other stuff going on in the NFL that for some reason nobody's paying attention to them Saints. And ever since that week one loss against Tampa Bay Buccaneers, them Saints have been rolling.
That's a fact. And to me, I feel like the only time that you heard about the Saints this year was the fact that Drew Brees broke Peyton Manning's record. So that speaks volumes about this ball club. They're sitting at 6-1 or 7-1, one of those right now.
7-1.
And you're not talking about this ball club. And like you said, they're head and shoulders second best team in the NFC. Head and shoulders above everyone else. It's not even close. But not only are they playing good ball, their offense is looking good. Mark Ingram's not even effective at this point. But their offense is still looking good. Then you got a guy that they just went out and got in Eli Apple that's going to help strengthen that secondary that was already strong to begin with. Marshon Lattimore is looking like he's back to where he was last year. It's just, I don't know, that I really like this Saints team. I like this Saints team a lot.
Like, they were good. They were good last year.
Yes, I feel like they probably would have went to the Super Bowl last year had they not had that debacle in Minnesota.
I think they definitely were going to the Super Bowl last year.
Yeah, they
that game in Minnesota was just that last play was just crazy.
Yes, it was. That's one of those. That's like a March Madness half court buzzer beater type joint. Like that's not something that's just we were the better team and we won.
You don't see it in the NFL too often, and I was watching it live too, and I was just like, "What the hell just happened?"
Right.
Like, that last play looked like a formality.
It did. It did. It was just it was sickening. But nevertheless, you would think a team like that would have had some type of hangover, and I feel like if they did have that hangover, it happened in week one, and now they back kicking. Like they look really good. Like they look impressive. I'm really impressed by New Orleans. Like, no question about it at all. I really like what I'm seeing out of them. Definitely.
Yeah, they look good for sure.
I think so too, but that's pretty much it for NFL. It's not really much more to talk about outside of trade deadline.
One more thing I want to say about the NFL.
What's that?
It's just a little quick something. Just, man, poor old Jameis Winston.
God. Yeah, for those who aren't familiar, Fitzmagic is now back as the starting quarterback after Jameis's god awful performance last week. So,
yeah, like, it's just
that it's really depressing to me because Jameis was one of my favorite quarterbacks coming out of college. I raved about Jameis before he even got to Florida State. I watched him in the Under Armour skills competition, I believe it was.
Yeah, you put me on.
Oh, my gosh. He made every pass possible, and all of them was on the money. Like, he looked like he was the next great thing. When I saw him play, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's the real deal. And then he went to Florida State and became the real deal, but he's just not what I thought he was.
Nope, he's not who we thought he was.
That's a fact. He's not as great as I felt like he could have been. I don't know if it's has anything to do with his off-field issues that are just lingering over into his play, or if it's just that he's not working as hard as he should.
He won't listen to his eye doctor. Put them damn contact
lenses. Squints, that's what they call him. That man, yeah, I mean, NFL, reading the NFL coverage, you will need your best vision, that's for sure.
That boy can't see nothing.
He can't. He probably out there throwing picks for that reason. That's ridiculous. Like,
my bad, bro. I thought that was Mike.
Like, you ain't run no post corner on that one?
Nah, man,
bro. I'm running a slant. What are you talking about?
He can't
thought
see.
You was back there. My fault. But, yeah, man, that pretty much wraps it up for NFL. But let's jump into this NBA. It's a lot to talk about early in the season, which is rare in the NBA. But first and foremost, let's go ahead and give your man some respect. Let's put some respect on the chef's name. This man is looking crazy to start the season. I mean, for those who watch basketball, I'm sure you saw his 52-point performance. It was 52-1. He had 52. 51 or 52, something like that. 50-point game, he only played three quarters. I mean, that doesn't even scratch the surface of what he's been doing, though. Steph Curry, I believe it was you that posted, he's been averaging 6.6 three-pointers a game. He's leading the NBA in scoring. This man's looking phenomenal, and he's doing it all by shooting exceptionally well from the field and the three. So, is Steph making a push at that MVP number three?
The numbers, it looks that way, but him and KD going to cancel themselves out, bro. Neither one of those are going to win the MVP again as long as they're together. But that's not what this season's about. This season is about reminding everybody who the hell he is. Because people have definitely forgotten since KD came through who Steph Curry is. Like, all you hear is a bunch of just disrespect all the time. He can't do this. He didn't do that. He struggles this time. He struggled that time. Like, people just be talking because they forgot. I advise y'all to use YouTube. Go back and remind yourself who it is.
I mean,
who we talking about.
Even without – go ahead.
Why do people think when you get on a better team, you lose ability? Like, people now, everybody, when KD was at the OKC, everybody's like, oh, he better than – he might be better than LeBron. He's second best in the world, blah, blah, blah. Then he comes to Warriors, wins two championships and two finals MVPs. Now, all of a sudden, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, and all these people are better than him.
Right.
Like, I don't understand the logic. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I don't know what basketball these people are watching. Must be – it's not the NBA. Y'all out here watching the ABA or whatever the hell. Y'all out here watching, I don't know. But, yeah, Steph definitely reminded people who he is, what he can do when he wants to or when he has the opportunity to or when he needs to, whatever, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even – people don't even have to go even into looking at YouTube. Look no further than a simple fact that KD did join the Warriors. But prior to KD joining the Warriors, did y'all forget that Steph won back-to-back MVPs right before KD got there?
So unanimous.
It's not like he was having like a down, you know, a down type of season or a couple of down seasons. This man was coming off back-to-back MVPs and then just added the second greatest player in the world. So now, not only does he still have that ability he had when he had those back-to-back MVPs, now he don't got to run himself into the ground because now you can run sets for other guys. You don't got to just run Steph and Clay off of screens. You got another bona fide killer on that squad that you can now run offense through, and Steph can take nights off. Like that night he had 50-something points. He didn't have to play the fourth. He could sit down. KD did the same thing a couple of games before against the Wizards. He asked to be checked out. So you add two guys like that together, it's dynamite. Like, come
yeah, because
on.
I mean, we talking about Steph right here, right now, but KD is also averaging like 29 a game, and he's
right
in scoring. They've both been on a tear. And we saw what Klay did yesterday.
Oh, my goodness. And for those who don't know, Klay just broke the NBA record with 14-3. So.
But, yeah, what I think we're seeing right now is three superstars who are now extremely comfortable playing with each other.
Yes.
And it's about to get real scary and spooky for the rest of the league. Like, these guys are now – extremely familiar with each other.
And that's the scariest part, is that they are familiar with each other and that they enjoy being around each other. So with the fact that all of their personalities click, they all seem to have that brotherhood thing down. The only thing that has torn teams apart like this is the chemistry. And their chemistry seems to be out of this world. So the question is not how good is Golden State. The question is, how long is Golden State going to be this dominant? How long is Golden State going to be together? Because it doesn't seem like they're going to take any steps back.
They're not. Only way this team gets worse is if somebody leaves. That's it. If they're together, it's only going to get better.
I agree.
And now Boogie's scrimmaging now. Boogie's clear for contact.
And for those who don't know, he's ahead of schedule.
Yeah, they're saying he can be back as early as Christmas, but they're talking more around January.
That's crazy.
They're looking at getting Boogie back to build some chemistry with him before the playoffs.
Yeah.
I just want Boogie to come back and drop 50 as well, so it'll be three teammates then all drop 40 this year. All four of them.
Yeah, because you know KD's he's primed for a huge performance.
He already had 47 in the Garden already.
Right, so that means he's – could you imagine a team with four niggas that score 50 points? That would be ridiculous, man. There wouldn't even be a debate as to whether Golden State is the greatest team that we've ever seen. Like, four niggas to score 50 points. Like, what? Three niggas to score 50 points. That's crazy. And we're talking about adding an extra guy to score 50 points. Like, that's crazy. That is crazy. But, yeah, man, I think Steph's definitely making a push at that MVP number three. But like you said, him and KD may cancel each other out. That seems to be much more likely than Steph winning that third MVP. But nevertheless,
unless he hit 500, because he on pace to hit 500 threes right now, which would be absurd. It was already absurd that he hit 402 because nobody still to this day
has hit 300. Yeah.
So if he hits 500, like, come on, bro. Let's just stop. Like, move. take the 3-point line away
for him. Like, he retired. Right.
Yeah. Like, no threes for Steph if he hit 500.
Exactly.
Threes.
Everything a two. Everything's a two.
Like, come on, yo.
Yeah. That's utterly ridiculous. But let's switch gears to a team who's not been as successful as Golden State. It's actually the polar opposite, and that's in the Eastern Conference. The Cavaliers are seeing tough times without LeBron. I know it was going to be tough, but I didn't think it was going to be this tough for him. And you add on top of LeBron being gone that Kevin Love can't stay on the court. He's banged up. Now you throw in the fact that they don't have Ty Lue anymore. He has been fired. For those who don't know, Ty Lue had a winning record.
Ty Lue was a low down
percentage was good. And that was my question. Do you think the Cavs should have fired Ty Lue?
Man, that shit was dirty. From my perspective, I'm looking at it from the perspective of this man went to how long he coached LeBron? 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Two finals, went to two straight finals. He went to three.
He went to three.
He was the coach when they came back from 3-1, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, he went to three straight finals, 1-1, and you gonna fire this man 6 games into the season after he lost the best player in the damn world?
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Come on. Come on. That's ridiculous, bro. I can't side with it as much. I mean, come on, man. It's wrong. And then, like you said, Kevin Love ain't been playing. You're starting a rookie point guard. Who in the hell on that team is supposed to score the basketball? Who you playing through?
Exactly.
Come on, man. That shit is dead wrong, bro. I can't rock with that.
I agree 100%. I didn't like the decision. I was completely shocked for the simple fact that, like you said, he just lost the best player in the world. So with it being this early in the season, what more are you wanting from him? Are you basically saying that we're going into this year and we better not struggle? I don't care if we lost LeBron. I don't care what the situation. I don't care if Kevin Love is healthy. We better not struggle starting off this season. To me, it seems like they went into this season already knowing we're going to let this nigga go. It's just a matter of when. We're just trying to find a reason. Oh, we started this. Our record looked like this. Oh, he's gone. He's out of there. I feel like it's some of that bitterness that LeBron's not there anymore, that they're just trying to cut ties with anything that reminds them of LeBron James.
No, what I think it is that LeBron had so much pull in that organization. I don't think they ever wanted Ty Lue. I think Ty Lue was Bron's hire, basically.
That makes a lot of sense.
And now Bron gone, they like, shit.
What the fuck you here for?
Yeah, because they really ain't have a reason to fire Tyronn Lue, bro.
Yeah.
Come on. No, they did not have a reason to fire him besides the fact that they were trying to go in a different direction. And the only reason you would be trying to go in a different direction from a coach that's been winning would be if you never wanted that guy in the first place. That's what I think it is. I don't see any other logical explanation for it.
My question is, what direction are you really trying to go in? Like, are you moving toward Colin Sexton is really going to be the face of this franchise? Are you looking
That's a problem.
Yeah.
He's not that good. He's a good ball player, but he's not franchise player.
Dude. I agree. And then even with that being the case, are you looking to say Kevin Love is the face of this franchise? And if that's the case, you just got rid of the guy who gave him more confidence than any other coach who coached him has. Kevin Love, when things were going bad, Ty Lue was the first one to step up in interviews and back him up and do that. Nah, it's not on Kevin. This and that. He was quick to come to his defense. He was quick to say, no, we don't have any issues in the locker room with Kevin and LeBron and this and that. You just got rid of an ally for a guy like Kevin Love. So who are you possibly going to bring in that can make your team any better or could put you in a better situation? I just don't understand what their reasoning was for firing him. Like, where are you trying to go? What does firing him help? That's my biggest thing.
That's why I said I think that was Bron's hire. Bron was like, should bring in Tyronn. Let's bring in Lue. Because, I mean, I just really can't put my finger on what else it could be, man. Yeah. The guy's done plenty for you. He's only 0-6.
Right.
He can get turned around quick.
It's the NBA. Like, come on. The first six games don't mean nothing.
No, you got 76 more games, bro.
Right.
So you can't even – I mean, hell, the Lakers is what, 2-5?
Exactly.
Like, it's not like – it's and it's not like you – what – who did you expect to be this year anyway?
Exactly. That's my thing. That's what that was my whole point. Like, you coming into this season, are you really coming into this season thinking we're not going to struggle? We better not struggle. I don't understand it.
Me either. It's maybe Dan Gilbert really feel like LeBron really ain't like that. Like, like, yeah, we lost LeBron, but we still should be fine. We still should be able to win 45, 50 games.
Yeah. Like, I've already thought that nigga, he's got issues. He's got major issues. And
because nobody, if you think about it, when's the next time Cleveland's going to have another great player? Nobody's just going to sign to Cleveland.
It's not like, going
to
happen.
The only reason LeBron went back to Cleveland is because that's where he's basically from.
Exactly.
Nobody's coming into the league like, shit, I'm trying to go to Cleveland.
Right. Because if you do go to Cleveland and you're trying to be that star or whatever, now you come into the footsteps of a ghost. You try and chase something that LeBron then built and you're probably never going to catch. It's just not going to happen. You saw what happened with a guy like Kyrie, who was extremely successful coming into the league as a player, as an individual, but as a team, you saw what was happening. They was getting smacked, like, week in, week out. Kyrie was getting his, but what was really going on with Cleveland? And I feel like at this point, that's what you're heading toward, because I don't see Cleveland being a contender anytime soon, because I don't see them pulling in any big free agents. It's going to be lottery picks for Cleveland for the next few years.
Period.
I don't understand what more you want, especially with a team like Cleveland that you – like the team that you have. If you're really looking into getting players as far as free agency or trades, how do you think trading Ty Lue is going to bode for that? Like, they're looking at Cleveland like, we don't know what type of situation they in down there. We don't know who they're going to hire. We don't know what their identity is going to be. At least with Ty Lue, you had somewhat of an identity. You don't have that now. You don't have an identity at all. Exactly. And you know you had a player.
Coach.
Exactly. An experienced coach and a player's coach. You knew that he was a player's coach. Now you don't have it. I don't understand it at all. But, man, I don't know. Like we both said, I feel like it's ridiculous. There's no reason why. But let's switch gears. You touched on the Lakers a little bit. And like you said, they are 2-5. Now, for some reason, the media is in an uproar about it. They've been all in LeBron's face. I mean, which is nothing new. The cameras are always in LeBron's face, but now they seem to be more, I guess they're being more adamant as to being in his face now. And my question to you is, are we making too much of the Lakers 2-5 start? I mean, like we both said, it's only seven games in for the Lakers. So, I mean, is it really that big a deal that the media is making all of this, you know, relevant?
Nah, it's not a big deal. I still think that the Lakers will still win somewhere between 47 and 50 games. But LeBron is getting a little bit frustrated, if you ask me. And I don't think he's frustrated because y'all are losing. I think he's frustrated at the way you guys are losing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I posted earlier today a clip of his post-game interview in the locker room yesterday, and the reporter had asked him about the close losses or whatever, and his whole tone changed, his demeanor changed, and he was just talking about how, of course, you know, Brian, he's a tap dancer around them type of questions. Like, when it comes to his teammates, like, you're not going to get anything out of him besides, we got to get better, we got to blah, 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 but he was basically saying that guys are out there making the same mistakes over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it, knowing how LeBron's basketball IQ is, he'll be patient a little bit, but at the same time, he's not going to have patience for you keep doing the same things over and over again. Like, if I tell you don't help off the strong side corner, Lonzo, and then every time the ball drives from on the strong side, you helping off and giving up corner threes. Like, after a while, Bron gonna be like, bruh, it's the fourth time I done told you stop helping off. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
LeBron's IQ is too high to have patience with people to keep making the same mistake over and over again.
I agree.
He's already to the point to where it's already irking his nerves that people aren't paying attention to detail like he does.
Yes, I agree with that. And to take it a step further, like Magic said, when he came and sat down with Magic, he already told Magic. He sat down with Magic and said, such and such likes to do this. Such and such likes the ball here. Such and such needs to work on this. Such and such doesn't thrive in this situation. LeBron knows that. So if LeBron has gone through and watched film on what your weaknesses are and what you need to work on, like you said, LeBron's IQ is so high to where he's like, I went and watched film on you, and I know your weaknesses. You don't even know your own weaknesses. And if you do, you're just too stubborn to go out here and change it because you're not doing what you need to do in order for you to be successful. And yes, if I'm LeBron, I would become, I guess, more impatient as the games go on because of, like you said, the way that you guys are losing. Now, granted, we did say last episode that LeBron is with a lot of young guys, so he has to teach them how to win in certain situations. But in LeBron's defense, LeBron can only do but so much. He can't go out there and guard your player for you. He can't go out there and deny a corner guy for you, like to allude to your example. That just doesn't make much sense to me. And I don't think that it's a big deal that they're 2-5, but definitely something's going to have to change. Now, granted, people also have to realize that, listen, 2-5, the Lakers have played 7 games. You got Brandon Ingram, who has missed 4 of those 7. You got Rondo, who has missed 3 of those 7. You're just now starting to realize, which us Laker fans, me and our friend Mark that we had on our show before, we've all seen that Josh Hart needs to be that guy in the starting lineup. The Lakers are just now realizing that. But there are going to be a lot of things that are still going to have to be figured out. And with you having 7 games and having all of those issues right there, a 2-5 start is not bad at all, especially when you got suspensions already. Like, it's early in the season. You're not going to gain the chemistry that you need to gain in 7 games. It's just not going to happen. And like LeBron said, this is a 4-year thing. This is a process. That's why he signed the 4 year. So it's not like he's coming in with high expectations for this year. But as far as his players are concerned and the way that they play, he's expecting high expectations from them. It may not be that we go out here and win every game. But I want you to go out here and, well, LeBron being the leader that he is, I guarantee at practice he's telling them, do this, do that. Nah, let's do this. Work on that. Work on this. I want to see what we go over in practice implemented into games. And that's why I feel like LeBron will get frustrated, like you said. So it's going to have to be some change as far as play is concerned, but not necessarily wins. LeBron's not here for the Lakers to be winning a whole bunch of games this year.
Yeah, LeBron knows that it's going to be growing pains with this team. But growing pains are not the same as you keep going out and doing the same. You messed up on this yesterday, and then we got a game today, and you messing up doing the same thing again today that you was doing yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
You yesterday. Like, that's a problem.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
Yeah, I feel like that's weighing on LeBron already. Guys keep doing that type of shit. But he's not mad at the losing.
Yeah.
But you gotta get better every game with LeBron.
That's a fact. But that pretty much wraps up our NBA segment. So let's jump into our weekly lock. Now, go ahead and tell the people what your record was last week. What was your result from last week?
Yeah, 4-0.
Yeah, for those who listened to our show last week, Sam had 4 locks. The locks that he gave y'all, they all hit. So if y'all would have played the way that Sam told you guys to or advised you guys to, or if you did, most likely you came up on some money. So let's get into this week's locks and bets. College and NFL, what's your locks looking like this week?
Man, I got three college games for the locks this week.
Okay.
I got Ohio State coming off the L, -19. I think that's a pretty safe one right there this week.
Agreed.
I think y'all can fill it up. And then I got Kentucky +9.5. I still got Georgia to win that game or whatever, but
that'll be close.
That 9.5 points. Yeah, I'll take that 9.5 points. And then LSU is +14.5 again at home against Bama.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely gotta take that one.
Yeah, take Bama. Definitely take Bama in that one, guys.
You said take Bama?
Yeah, you said Bama. You said LSU's favorite 14 plus, right?
No, they're getting +14. That means
Bama's 14. Okay. Yeah, take no. Take LSU, guys. That game's gonna be closer than that.
LSU at home.
Yeah.
If Bama beat LSU by more than 15 points, that's your national champs.
Right there. That's a fact.
That's your national champs right there. Give them the trophy after that game if they win by 15.
That's a fact. You got any NFL locks this week?
Nah, I've seen some games that I would like to take, but I wouldn't necessarily call them a lock.
Yeah.
It's more closer to 50%. So I stayed away from that. I got these three right here for this week.
All right. So y'all heard it here first. Ohio State. Who was your other one? Ohio State, UK, and LSU. Those are your locks for this week. So, I mean, like I said, Sam went 4-0 last week. So if you got your faith in Sam, head to your bookie, put that in. That's a fact.
I'm 9-4 since we started this segment too. That ain't too bad.
So I mean, hey, the record speaks for itself, guys. Hey, go. If I was y'all, I would go out and listen to Sam this week because those picks from this week, I feel like they're a lot easier than last week's picks. And seeing that he went undefeated last week, hey, that should tell you everything you need to know. But let's jump into our pick-ems before we get out of here. Number 13. WVU at number 17, Texas. Who you got?
I want WVU to win. I really, really, really do. But I'm taking Texas.
I got Texas, too. I can't go against Coach Herman that one. I got Texas in a shootout, most definitely. But I'm taking Texas, nevertheless. Next game, number 6, Georgia at number 9, Kentucky. Who you got?
I'm taking Georgia in the dogfight.
Same here. I got Georgia in a close one against Kentucky. Number 14, Penn State at number 5, Michigan. Who you got?
Michigan.
I got Michigan by a field goal. Close one there. Most of that is playing off of because I'm an Ohio State fan and I need Michigan to win if we're going to have any hope of getting into this playoff. So part of that's coming with bias, but I'm still taking Michigan. I got Michigan and a tight one. Last one, game of the week, number 1 Alabama at number 3 LSU. I need your pick and your score.
Give me Bama.
I mean, if you've been listening to these episodes, you know I've picked LSU. I can't go away from my pick. I can't stray away from my pick the week of the game. Give me LSU by a score of 24-17. Nah. 24-21 LSU. Let's jump to the NFL. It's not too many good games. We'll go two games this week. Los Angeles Rams at the Saints. Two teams we just talked about. Who you got?
You already know. I got the Rams.
He got the Rams.
All bias aside, though, for real, I really think the Rams will win this game. A close one.
All right, man. So here's the deal. We done had the Rams week in and week out for the last, I believe, 3 weeks. And I've gone against them every week. And I feel like this week, if I actually choose the Rams, they're going to lose. So for that reason, my gut is telling me to go with the Rams, but my mind, my smarter part of me is saying go with the Saints. So I'm going with the Saints, and I think this is the game where the world actually realizes, oh, yeah, the Saints are really – they're really a force to be reckoned with, because – I feel like it's due for the Rams to lose their first game anyway, because it's just...
Yeah, I won't be... That's what I was about to say. I'm not going to be mad whenever L does come. I definitely want that bitch to come before the playoffs start.
Yeah, that's a fact. So I think that it will be this week. Excuse me, guys, but a week from today, my Blue Devils will be taking on UK. I can't fucking wait. I just saw the commercial on TV, so I got juiced. But... Yeah, man, them Blue Devils. But as I said, I got the Saints. This is the game where everybody realizes, oh, the Saints gave the Rams their first loss of the season. Oh, shoot, they got the same record as the Rams now. And now they'll be first in the NFC because they'll own the tiebreaker. So I got the Saints in that one. Last one, Green Bay, New England. Green Bay at New England. Who you got? Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady. This was actually, if y'all were listening to our opening episode, this is who I had in my Super Bowl pick, were these two teams. Definitely not my pick now. But nevertheless, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady. It's always a showdown. Who you got, Sam?
Give me the discount double check.
Ooh, I think coming off of last week's loss, I want to take discount double check. But a part of me, I don't know, man. I want to take Brady because Brady's at home.
And that don't matter to Rodgers.
And yeah, that doesn't matter to Rodgers.
But the field 100 yards.
That's a fact. But then you also take into account that Green Bay no longer has Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. They no longer have Ty Montgomery. Like, they've lost some pieces to that team. But that would point all signs toward Green Bay losing. But with that being the case, I think that Aaron Rodgers goes out and proves to the world that shit does not matter. I'm still Aaron Rodgers. We're still the Green Bay Packers. And I think they go out and get the win. I'm taking Aaron Rodgers. I like Aaron Rodgers over Brady and company. I don't really know. I think it'll be somewhat close. But I'm taking Rodgers and company. Best quarterback in the game. Bar none right now. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter, like you said, where they play at. So, that's my pick. But that pretty much wraps up our episode for this week. Sam, was there anything else you wanted to add before we got out of here?
Yeah, I need to add – well, I was going to add what you added about that commercial.
Yeah.
I was going to plug us at the end because I ain't want to overwhelm y'all too much before college basketball season came, because you go hear plenty about the Blue Devils. Because me and Ish both love our Blue Devils. Yeah. So you'll hear plenty about them. But, yeah, I watched us play on Saturday, and we looked real spooky. Yeah. Now, granted, it was just a Division II team, but they were the Division II national champions, so there were no scrub team. You expect to blow them out, but you don't expect to beat a team, the D2 national champs, by 85 points. with 40-plus assists.
This is just going to be a spooky year because, I mean, we have the tools this year to be that team. Like, I feel like this is that team that we've been anxiously waiting for. Like, we've had good teams these last couple of years, and obviously we've had high hopes. Like Sam said, every year going in, Sam's screaming banner. Every year. But for me, this year is more so of a, damn, we really tough as hell this year. Like
the point guard, we have stability at the point guard spot, which is key.
Hey, I'm gonna put it this way. The last time we had a Jones starting that point guard as a freshman, y'all know how that season ended.
And last time we had point guards, we win the title. When you give Coach K a thoroughbred point guard that is going to control the game, take care of the basketball, and hit big shots and make big plays down the stretch of games, we win titles, man.
Hey.
And this year, I feel like Trey Jones has a very similar role to what Tyus's role was with us.
Man.
Like, it's so
it's extremely crazy. Similar. It's extremely similar. And the best thing about this ball club is he's not really the only facilitator. Like, well, RJ Barrett can really facilitate. A lot of people look at RJ Barrett like, oh, he can go out there and fill it up. Yeah, but RJ Barrett is also a facilitator. That's what makes Zion him so good. Exactly. Zion can pass it. Cam Reddish, Cam, I mean.
Yes. And Coach Tay, I watched him when he came on First Take. I know you don't watch First Take. When we get done recording, you need to go watch the interview we had on there.
I will.
His face lights up talking about this team. He talks about how they love to get better. They love watching film. The chemistry with this team is crazy. The mixture of the youth and the upperclassmen, and how the upperclassmen have all been just taking care of the young guys. Like, this team is different.
Haven't seen anything like this since the year we won it all. Like, we really had that balance of Quinn Cook, our senior leader, leading these young guys to where they needed to be with that young talent that meshed. Those guys were really brothers. The way that you can actually tell that they're brothers is all of these guys have separate careers now in the NBA. If you follow any of these guys on Instagram, you always see these guys together still. It's a brotherhood. They don't call it the brotherhood for nothing.
Facts.
This year looks to be just like that.
The freshman guys, all five of them, Joey Baker, Cam Reddish, Zion Williamson, Trey Jones, and RJ Barrett have been in a group chat for over a year, way before they got on campus. Like, they're really good friends. Like, this is not just three, four, five good basketball players teaming up to come play basketball. This is friends coming to play basketball at one place.
It's like, just like it's really crazy. It's just like the year we won it all. Yeah, like,
that's what I'm saying. And
Ja and Tyus was not going anywhere without the other. And then you throw in a guy like Justice, and then a guy like Grayson. Like, it's oh my gosh.
The main thing Coach K keeps saying is that these guys are secure with who they are. And apparently our other freshman classes have had some issues with accepting
being that guy. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I never knew that, I guess, from the outside looking in, because nobody really talks about it. But Coach K basically said on First Take that's been an issue the past couple years, is that guys were always worried about things they shouldn't have been worried about. It should have just been playing ball. Mm-hmm. But he said there's none of that with this team. Everybody – anytime anybody makes a shot, everybody's just genuinely happy for everybody. So
yeah.
I'm extremely excited for this year. Like, I know I'm extremely biased when it comes to my leader, but this year, for real, I really am extremely excited about this team.
Yeah, I agree 100% with what you just said. Like, it's that genuine happiness for your teammate, it shows. Like, I follow Duke men's basketball on Instagram. And there are times where after the game, they'll have the stat sheet and RJ Barrett, who's the number one player in the nation, will run up to Zion like, bro, you went crazy tonight. Like, all in is like happier for him than he's happier for him than he's happy for himself. So it's little things like that that you see that just, they're just crazy. Like when RJ was on Slam Magazine, when he made the cover of Slam Magazine, who was the person to present it to him? It was not Coach K. It was not nobody's coach. It was Zion Williamson. And it was not just a, bro, you on the cover. It was, hey, bro, you on the cover. You want to know,
hey, that's
crazy?
Another thing they do too, bro.
Right.
They clown each other.
Exactly.
They clown each other about how much clout they got.
Exactly.
Like, anytime Zion try to say anything, they be like, oh, shut up, bro. Drake wore your jersey.
Right. Like, exactly. Exactly. Like, it's that genuine bond. And like he said, like, the simple fact that this statement really held a lot of weight to me was Zion, once he held up the poster, it wasn't even like, bro, you want to cover? It was, bro, you want to know something crazy? Last year, Jason Tatum was on the cover, and your name was down here. Now it's flip-flop. You on the front cover, Jason Tatum's name down here. Just the simple fact that you're following your teammates that much to a year ago, you specifically remember that your teammate's name was on this cover, but now he's the face of the cover. Little stuff like that really shows that these guys were not just put together and now they have a bond. Like you said, this has been a year bond.
And well, they, none of them were committed when they started that group chat.
Exactly. And see that, hey, The stars are aligned. Banner. It's meant to happen. So, y'all heard it here first, man. Next week when we're actually filming, we'll probably be playing. So, we're probably going to film our show a little later next week.
Yeah, I ain't even going to
fake.
We a day late next week.
Yeah, that's a fact. But, yeah, man, that's pretty much it for this episode. Signing out, it's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam, man. We appreciate y'all.